Welcome to Michigan Hockey Cast 4.23. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Just try not to scream in terror.
About what?
About what?
The spring game.
Are you nervous that Alex Orji is going to be the starter next year? No. Are you nervous? I mean, we wrote a preview, combined or conjoined preview, that posted one of the days this week. You did a rewatch. You're going to have a preview. We're going to have a hockey cast. It's like Frozen Four time. Like, I wasn't nervous going into last weekend because it's like, okay, these are the teams that Michigan should beat. And at some point you just have to trust that they are the better team and they will win, or they'll get randomed. And they did win and it got close in one of them. Okay. But for the most part, they blew teams away, but this is a different level. And now it's like the next podcast we do will be in, you know, a week or thereabouts. And we might be talking about a national champion, or we'll be extremely deflated. So are you nervous?
No, I'm interested to see how this goes. The teams in the Frozen Four are all really good, and we'll see what happens. I think that Michigan has accomplished all of the things that we really wanted this season in terms of reasonably being able to say this is what we really need to do, and they did all that. So now we're kind of at the point where either they'll go that final extra mile or they won't, but they've already done a lot. So I don't think that this is an all or nothing or whatever.
Yeah, and I sort of wrote a little bit about that at the end of the Pros Before preview. Is it okay if Michigan doesn't win? And it's like, well, no, of course it's not, because this is why everybody's here. This is what the hype is about. This is why everybody came back when they're all first round picks and everything, or even guys like Pasta and Van Wy, who probably could have gone on to ECHL contracts and started making money and moving on with their lives. But, you know, you look at this roster and you're like, maybe I want to be a part of it. And so, no, of course, it's not okay. But at the same time, like you just said, I mean, it's single elimination hockey. And I mean, the Brendan Morrison team of 97 was an insane team, and they lost in the semifinals. But that doesn't mean they weren't the best team. It just means that you don't always win every game. And I don't know. So you are known to pace a bit during games at times. So when does that kick in for you? Like, is it, oh, we're inside half an hour now? Or is it when they're showing the guys skating around as the music plays and you know there's going to be a puck drop? Or is it after a certain goal is scored? Like, when do you go into, I am no longer allowed to sit down mode?
I mean, it depends the stakes of a game and kind of what the situation at hand is, right? Like the Ohio State football game in the fall, you know, that's like a high pressure situation in which you kind of felt like they have to win this game. Not like, well, that's another conversation, but
yeah,
sort of like what the stakes meant in terms of being able to change the narrative, all that stuff. You know, that's kind of a game where it's a pressure cooker from the very beginning. You know, hockey, it depends. A lot of times it's really not till like the end or like an overtime or something. But a lot of times I can just stand and be whatever. I don't know. Probably what it will be on Thursday in the press box. I mean, that will probably just be standing watching the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason I stand during games is, I mean, part of it's easier to see because, like, when you're at Yoast, you're so high up and, like, you can kind of sit, but then you're leaning over and the laptop's in the way and all this stuff. But, I mean, now just anywhere I go, it's like it's for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm always emotionally involved, but you're just, I have to stand. I mean, that's what I do at football until Michigan's up by 4 touchdowns, right? And then you can sit and maybe look at Twitter or whatever. But, like, otherwise, I'm not going to sit here. Like, this is what I think about all week, you know? And that's kind of where we're at now, is this is what we're thinking about all week, is these games. And like you said, there is some pressure off because of the things that they've already accomplished. And now you've put yourself into I mean, all these teams are so close, and I know the Kratch ratings are divisive, and there was a little bit of a debate about that in our comment section, but like, I mean, if Denver wins a national title, no one's going to be like, well, they're not the best team. Or if Minnesota State or Minnesota, well, they're not, because they will have beaten two teams, and you don't get a large sample size of those games in a college hockey season. You get a few. Maybe you get more if you're in the NCHC, kind of, but then it's usually one or two of the same teams. Now you're actually playing a bunch of different teams. And if Michigan is able to beat Denver and Minnesota State again, who they've already beaten, I mean, then there's no doubt, right? And that's kind of true for everybody.
Yeah, for the most part.
So, all right, now that we've like gotten into a rhythm and are breathing again, or at least I am, maybe you're fine. You seem pretty even keeled in general. So we can talk about Denver. That is going to be Michigan's first opponent. We touched on him briefly a little bit last week on some things. We've both written a few things about it too. I mean, they're basically Michigan. Even when you start looking at the guys that they have on the team, they have three lines of scorers and a bunch of guys that put the puck in the net. They will activate their defensemen. Their goalie is like a smidge probably below Portillo, despite being Swedish and huge. And maybe not a puck player, but I mean, Denver has a bunch of dudes. It's not like maybe even other good teams that you would say get there in other ways. Denver has a lot of individual skill as well.
Yeah, Denver is on the whole a little older than Michigan in terms of, especially on their forward group, where they've got, you know, Ryan Barrow, Cole Gutman, Brett Stapley, Cameron Wright. Those guys are all seniors. That's four of their top nine. And then you toss in Bobby Brink as a junior. And so they've got a little more experience up front. But this is a really good team, a team that produces a lot of offense, 4.3 goals per game. And they have guys who make all of their lines interesting. And, you know, you start in the top line where you have Brink and Gutman, who are the kind of the headliners, all three letter wearers on the team or on the forward group are on that top line. Ryan Barrow on the left wing, I didn't notice him too much, but Brink on the right wing is a phenomenal player, 55 points in 37 games this season. I think he is a Hobie finalist.
I believe that's true, yes.
Have they cut it down from 10, or is that just roll with?
I think it's at 3
okay.
Now.
Well, anyway, yeah, Bobby Brink was on the 10-person list. He's a really good player. He was a member of that USNTDP team from 2019,
the absolutely loaded team with Jack Hughes.
He wasn't. I got that one wrong. He was the best scorer not on that team in the USHL that year. He played a little bit with the U18s, but was mostly in the USHL with Sioux City. I just associate him because, you know, American prospect in the mega year for American talent. He slipped into the second round with Philly to the Flyers. For being a little undersized, mostly at 5'9", 166, but he's bulked up big time in college in terms of his strength. I noticed that. But 55 points on the year, and he drives that line with Gutman in the middle. Gutman was a sixth rounder of Tampa, and that line can make it happen. And, you know, I would say that line is probably more comparable to Michigan's top line in terms of the Beniers line. I think that's where you would make the comparisons. And it's a veteran line, two seniors and a junior, and they do a lot of scoring for this team. So that kind of starts things out.
But it doesn't really drop off from there, does it? I mean, their second line also comes at you and has a couple of guys that are also capable of putting the puck in the net.
Yeah, well, Carter Savoy has had a great season, too. 43 points on 21 goals, tied for the team lead in goals. Actually, I think he has the team lead now to 22. I'm looking at their line chart from the Duluth game, so the stats are a little off. But He scored the game winner in that one, the one that bounced off the end boards and off Fanti's back. He was standing in the crease. But Savoy's a great player, 5'10". A common thread with this Denver team is they are really undersized. 10 of the 13 forwards they skated in the Duluth game are under 6 foot, which you don't see all that often. Savoy is, for those curious, the brother of Matthew Savoy, who plays in the WHL with the Winnipeg Ice, likely a top 10-ish pick in this upcoming draft. Carter was a fourth rounder from his home province, Edmonton Oilers. He drives that line, but I like Brett Stapley a lot, too. He's another veteran guy, a senior, seventh-round pick of Montreal years ago, 41 points in 37 games entering that Duluth one. And he's got a touch of skill in his game. And then the third member of that line is Jack Devine, who is a draft eligible for 2022, likely in the third or fourth round range. But, you know, plenty of NHL talent. I mean, that's kind of the story of the Denver team, is they don't have a ton of high picks, but as we've seen in college hockey, Minnesota is another example of this, where, like, unless your first rounders just, like, really pop off, a lot of times there isn't a huge difference between getting a second and a third rounder and a first rounder, especially if you can get those second, third, fourth, fifth rounders into their upperclassmen seasons. By that point, that player is roughly on the same level as a freshman who is a first rounder, or like a fringe first rounder.
Well, that's the key, right? Is, like, everybody wants their talented players to stick around. And I mean, I don't know that there's a formula that you do that, but when you have guys that are second and third rounders, like you said, and you look at their roster and they have JR or SR next to them, you're kind of like, hey, how did you do that? There are plenty of players Michigan has had over the years where you're like, oh man, it'd be great to see you for a few seasons.
Yeah. And I think all those guys they're crafty. It's an undersized line, but that line does a lot of scoring. And then the third line is actually my favorite line, where you have Massimo Rizzo centering Carter Mazur and Cameron Wright. Wright is a guy they scooped up from Bowling Green as a out of the portal. 37 games played, 21 goals in that span for him. He was right neck and neck with Savoy for the team lead in goals. And then you look at the other wing, and Mazur is a player I really like. He was a third round pick, one of the higher drafted guys on this team. Of the Red Wings, native of Jackson, Michigan, so shout out to that. He is just such a tenacious player. What I love about this line is they're fast, they're really competitive, they hit the boards hard on the forecheck. And Mazur is still got room to bulk up at 6'1", 173, but already pretty strong and tenacious on the puck, and Wright's a good shooter. And Rizzo was pretty darn fast, too, in the middle there. And that line is, you know, I would say that one is probably comparable to your Duke and Beecher line in terms of where you're drawing comparisons, although I think Mazur and Rizzo are both better scorers than Duke and Beecher, whereas Simmons is probably comparable to Wright.
That's sort of what I was thinking is, okay, so that's their third line, and they're both freshmen. So I glanced over at Duke and Mackey, and like you said, Mazur and Rizzo both have 36 and 34 points, whereas you look at Michigan's guys and Samo has 29 and Duke has 19. So they are not, I mean, Denver's freshmen are scoring at a little bit higher of a rate at, you know, much more production than Michigan's line. Although I would say that, you know, obviously this Beecher line with those two freshmen have been very productive in the second half of the season for sure. It did take them, I think, a little bit to get going. And I don't know how many players from Denver missed time for either the Olympics or juniors. I don't think many, but
they had one go to the juniors.
One.
I believe Mazur was their one.
Right. So they've basically had the majority of their team set for a while, whereas Michigan's been bouncing around for, you know, this group going over here and then over there. And, you know, there's been, I mean, how it feels like Michigan's basically played three seasons almost.
Yeah. The fourth line is kind of, I mean, you know, it's their version of the Garrett Van Wy line. But again, you have that size component where the biggest one on that fourth line is Carter King at 5'10", 185. McCade Webster is really scrappy. He's the center on that line. He's one of their top penalty killers. He was the lone forward they put out there in 45 seconds of 5-on-3 they had to kill against Duluth. And then Owen Ozar on the side with Brett Edwards there as well. Those four guys rotated in on that bottom line. They don't do much, but You know, neither does Michigan's fourth line, except for in the tournament, apparently. But that's the line that they'll put out there in penalty killing purposes, defensive zone draws, that kind of thing. One other note about the team, and this is true for the forwards especially, but they recruit a lot out of Canada. If you just look at where the players are from, Barrow, Stapley, Savoy, Rizzo, Wright, Ozar, Edwards, and King, that's 8 of their 13 forwards are Canadian, and mostly all from Western Canada, either Alberta or British Columbia. So,
well, I mean, they're in Denver. That's kind of where your recruiting ground's going to be, outside
where you're gonna
of draw talent. Denver. So, I mean, they don't have the inroads at Minnesota or, you know, around Chicago or
they
Michigan.
They do have a few from California, though. So,
well,
credit that. Yeah. Cole Gutman is from L.A. Shai Buam, who we'll get to on defense, is from San Diego. And Mayhew, also on defense, is from Anaheim Hills. So it's kind of a mix. It's just a different composition, right, where Michigan draws much more from, you know, the Midwest or occasionally Ontario, whereas this team draws very heavily from Western Canada as well as the Western states. So I like those little subplots. Where, of course, the Minnesota schools on the other side of the bracket draw very heavily in state. So,
yeah, a couple of interesting things that I found that, you know, we were kind of debating this about Michigan. I don't think on the air, but just texting. And I said, can you name the two players from Michigan that are negative in plus minus? And there is now only one, thanks to one of those guys going off and getting back to even in the last game. But it was Van Wy was at -3. He's up to even now. And then Karenin, who hasn't really played in most of this calendar year. But when you look at Denver, they have one guy on their entire roster that is negative, and that is the guy you said that sort of chips in on the fourth line, Owen Ozar. I mean, he's probably comparable to Karenin in that sense because he's played 19 games. Karenin's played, I think, 15. But Ozar's -1. So everyone on their team is not getting caved in, at least from a scoring standpoint. And it's they all have, I mean, there's a couple guys you can pick out, but most players are in double digits. So it doesn't really matter who's out there for Denver. They're generally beating their opponent. And the other thing that was sort of interesting is that they don't really have any like shooting percentage that is absurd. Like you have Stapley is at 16.5% and Wright is at 16.8%.
Yeah, Wright's a shooter. I don't think outside of him they have many other great shooters. Denver gets to the #1 offense in the country through shot volume. They are #2 in the country behind only, of course, Penn State in shots
per
game.
It's always debatable given who is officiating that game in the box, but sure.
But Denver generates 37.4 shots per game, and there is a large gap between them and #3, Quinnipiac. The gap between them and Quinnipiac is the same size as the gap between Quinnipiac and like #25. So Denver generates a ton of shots, and that's how or the key to getting a lot of their offense.
So they're going to try to beat you by volume.
Yeah, well, they beat you by just having a bunch of, they're kind of like the, I would compare them to the Florida Panthers in terms of having a bunch of offensive lines, and they just try to beat you by stepping on you all the time, where every time you're out there, they have a chance to score with every line on the ice, and they can just hit you over and over and over and over again.
But it's interesting what you said about their size, because if, I mean, the Quinnipiac game, when Michigan faces Minnesota, Notre Dame, those are teams that Michigan has played in the last few weeks that are known for their size and girth, and that is not Denver. And So do you like that matchup for Michigan in terms of, okay, I know they have shown that they can outspeed and bump those big teams and still get wins, but do you think that this is going to be ultimately to their advantage to not have to face a team like that and to just try to win a track meet?
Well, I would like to see Michigan use their size advantage in the corners, especially. I mean, Michigan's average weight is 187. Denver's average weight, 181. Michigan's got an extra inch or two on average over Denver. And so that could come in handy, especially if you get the Beecher line out there and they're doing battle along the walls and that sort of thing. Denver also, another common thread between these two teams, Denver takes a lot of penalties. Michigan's way up at number one in PIM at 577, but Denver's seventh at 508. So not exactly Minnesota in terms of staying out of the box. And if you look down their team, they got a lot of dudes with 40 plus PIM. So,
that's that probably in. I mean, I haven't figured out how to find all those as majors, but I wonder if a lot of that is just taking a lot of like silly penalties. Like,
you know, they did take a major in the game against UMass Lowell. Brett Stapley had one, and they had to kill off 5-on-3 time against Duluth. So that showed off in the first two games. I'll say that.
You know, it's interesting that somebody brought up in the comments of the Frozen Four preview about Michigan's weakness being discipline. And I didn't really argue with that because it can be kind of true. But the other thing that you and I discussed even was that, you know, they haven't taken really bad penalties since that Beecher cross check to the face at the end of February. There was probably obviously going to be one here or there, but it hasn't been as big an issue. And sometimes I wonder if that's a little bit of postseason reffing in the sense of, all right, this is not going to be a 7 power play game, or you just don't have the Big Ten refs that you did that were kind of continuously calling those majors and all that stuff. I mean, you know, there weren't really a ton of power plays in the Allentown regional. I didn't really count or see as much of the Loveland one, so maybe there were more there. But I thought, you know, the last few games, and well, even the Quinnipiac St. Cloud, there's like one penalty.
Zero penalties in that game.
There was zero. I thought there was one.
No,
but
there was zero. I mean, I will say the Brisson one in the offensive zone against Quinnipiac was real bad.
Yeah, but that was the one I was thinking. But
you know, I don't know. I haven't studied the NCAA tournament empirically compared to the regular season. I will say that the line that a lot of fans use, at least in the NHL playoffs, about refereeing is not true. It gets exacerbated by playoff overtimes that go a long time and there aren't many penalties, but actually there isn't actually any drop off in terms of number of penalties in the regular season versus the playoffs. It's just in the playoffs, it gets condensed early in games and then games drag on. And then
so there are two games, one where penalties are called,
yes,
the other one where none.
But the normal 60 minutes is actually very comparable to the regular season in penalty calls. But anyway, defensively, this team, their most talented, in quotation marks, because draft position is not always the best use of that.
Sure.
But by draft position is where their more talented players are. They've got three second rounders on the defense, one on each pair, Sean Behrens, and then Shai Buom and Antti Tuomisto. Buom and Tuomisto are their two big defensemen, both Red Wings draft picks. Buom is 6'3", 220. Tuomisto, 6'5", 210. Both guys were picked as sort of a mix of offense and size. That's translated with Buom, and I think he's an interesting player to watch as he grows more and gets more used to college hockey as a freshman. Tuomisto is kind of just flatlined as a Luke Martin type, in terms of not realizing the offensive potential at all at the college level. Behrens is a smart player. I like him a lot. He's a really undersized defenseman at 5'9", 178, but he has a lot of the same style that the Avalanche look for and why he was drafted by them. Although he's not quite a great skater, but he does have a lot of those same traits. Kyle Mayhew is paired with him, and so that's kind of, I guess, their Edwards-Blankenberg pairing, where both guys definitely could be punished physically with 5'9 and 5'7 there. Mayhew's the more defensive-minded. Mayhew and Justin Lee, who is down on the third pair, those are their two defensive guys that take the PK1 assignments. And then Mike Benning and Behrens tend to go out there on PK2. Benning, quick shout-out, is the nephew of notorious / infamous Vancouver Canucks general manager Jim Benning, also brother of Matt Benning of the Edmonton Oilers. So hockey family there. But the thing I noticed about this decor is that, you know, compared to Michigan, they don't get their defensemen to do the sorts of end-to-end rushes the way Michigan does. Their defensemen very rarely end up below the goal line. They don't do that sort of thing. But the defensemen do pile up assists and help the offense out because they're really good at stretch passes. They're really good at that quick up. That's what they want the defensemen to do. Take the pass and then, boom, try to find it up the ice. See if you can get a 2-on-2 or a 3-on-3 or a breakaway or something like that going. And that is one where if I'm advising the Michigan defenseman in practice this week, I'm saying you cannot let the team for Denver, the forwards for Denver, get lost behind you.
Yeah.
You have to know where the last one is, because if you turn it over up the ice and you have lost someone behind you, they're going to make the pass to set up a breakaway or a rush chance the opposite way.
And that's something that Michigan has been susceptible to at times this year.
At times. And I would say also, Michigan last week, whatever you want to call it.
In their last games.
Yeah, last games in Allentown, especially the one against Quinnipiac, where Michigan, we talked about this last week, allowed 3-on-3s to turn into like 2-on-1s because the defense just collapsed and crumbled. And Denver is a team that allows that to happen. They have the skill. There was a play against Duluth where they come in 3-on-3 and it quickly turns into more or less a 2-on-1 because they have the skill to kind of move it across and the defensemen get kind of confused about what's going on.
And I wonder if that's something that was sort of taking your foot off the gas a little bit, or if it was something that Quinnipiac was doing that was messing with them, because that is not something that I remember really Michigan struggling with throughout the year, is being back in position. And then, I mean, obviously a guy can get beat by one guy. That's not what I'm talking about, where it's one-on-one, but where you crisscross or you drop pass to a third guy or something and Michigan has no idea what to do and two guys go to the wrong spot. I mean, that, you're right. That happened a little bit against Quinnipiac, but I don't remember that being a thing that Michigan has done previously very often. Do you?
Not really, but it's a concern and it's something you have to watch out for because they have the talent to exploit that and to make that happen. The last stylistic note I'll throw out there is they really do like to be aggressive on the forecheck. And, you know, any way you slice it, this is going to be a challenge for Michigan's defensemen, because Denver loves to put their first forward really deep in the zone, especially below the goal line, to push play out from behind the net. They're not one of those teams that just stands there and let you stand behind the net for 25 seconds while you wait for the perfect exit pass. They put pressure on you. They have F2 kind of surf around a little bit and will often send him up to put more pressure on. They are more active in the neutral zone. They don't just sort of stationary. This is our 1-2-2 or whatever. They like to move the forwards around a little bit in the neutral zone to muck things up. And, you know, there were sequences where Duluth for 25 seconds couldn't get across the center line because pressure was just at them all the time. They would break the pressure in the D zone, but then get swallowed up by the other forwards right at the center line. And so this is a team that really puts a lot of pressure on you and they like to attack, but that creates counter punching chances. And I would expect both of these teams will get multiple odd man rushes per period. And the nature of this game is going to be, unless they come out playing something totally different, which Michigan, you know, could, I don't know, but just looking at it, this is a game where you're going to expect your goalie to make some really big saves. That's how these games go, right? You are not going to win these games if your goalie isn't coming up with some huge stops here and there.
The one thing that I find interesting that you were saying is, you know, you talk about them putting Michigan under pressure with their forecheck. And there are teams that have done that to Michigan that have been successful, but those teams are generally bigger, stronger, thicker teams. And so this is not a situation where you're necessarily worried about Blankenberger Edwards getting creamed into the boards. This is going to be a skating competition. And that's something
to some extent. But I mean, they don't have the massive size, but they have some guys that are tenacious, even if they don't have the size, and they're going to close in on you really fast and, you know, pound for pound do their best in terms of that. So
this is a game where Owen Power can really show himself as the number one pick, because
that's what you hope.
He has the size and the ability to skate and pass, and this is where, okay, come get him, and this is where he can live up to his hype.
That's the hope. I think that when you look at this matchup again, I think the goaltending you can't sort of talk about enough in terms of how this game is going to swing, because you have Magnus Crona in one net against Erik Portolo in the other. Portolo comes in with a 9.26 save percentage.
Which is
Crona
good.
comes in with a 9.08. Now, what's interesting about those two is that when you look under the hood, goals against average is not majorly different. Crona's goals against is 2.0, or at least it was going into the Duluth
216 is what
two
he
one
has.
six is what it is, because he only gave up one goal against Duluth. So your goals against averages are very similar, 216 to 213, but there's an 18-point gap in save percentage. Portillo sees more shots than Crona does on average. Michigan is not as good of a possession team as Denver is in the numbers, but makes a lot more saves. And generally speaking, when you see a goalie with a 216 goals against average, but a pretty low save percentage at 908, 909, it generally means the goalie isn't very good. And what I will say about Crona is that he did give up one very bad goal against Denver. I thought the ones,
Duluth.
yeah, Duluth. I thought the ones against Lowell were not as bad to me. I thought those were ones where Lowell's forecheck placed pressure on Denver's defense and created some opportunities and kind of broke down the Pioneer defense. But Crona did give up one from the point that was pretty soft to me against Duluth, and that is the kind of goal that could swing this game. And especially if he just doesn't make a lot of saves on a high percentage looks, that's the thing that could swing this game. And Michigan is going to need Portillo to play really well. They're going to need Portillo to come up with some big saves. You don't beat a Florida Panthers type team unless your goalie is terrific. That's just a fact. When you play a great offensive team, your goalie's got to show up. And you have to acknowledge that, yeah, there's going to be some ones where the goalie is expected to make a tough save, where the defense hangs him out to dry or whatever. That's just what happens when you play a great offensive team.
Yep. But he has pretty much all year. I mean, that's something that I wrote a little bit about was that, I mean, has he given up 10 bad goals this year? And I mean, maybe you might be able to count up there, but it's not a lot more than that if you get that high. And, you know, there's always debatable ones. It could be like, well, you know, but I mean, I just mean like goals, you're like, woof, that one's bad. And he hasn't. And this is, it's sort of like you look at this team and they're sort of built for this game. Because they're going to be able, they should be able to skate with Denver and are slightly bigger, which is a weird thing to say for a Michigan team. But then they're going to have the goalie that's going to bail them out when they're taking those chances. And, you know, will Denver is kind of the question. And maybe he has an all-world game and then you tip your cap and you're like, hello, randomness. But at this point, you would have to say that Michigan has a bit of an advantage in net. And that is sort of the one slight difference between these two teams. Is there anything of specific note that you noticed on special teams that they do real quick,
I
or
wasn't
is
impressed by their power play at all. Their power play was bad in the regional. They did not score a power play goal in the regional. They had a bunch of chances against Lowell, did not convert on any. I thought they passed way too much between the wings and the point. They didn't really filter it down low at all. When you look at their percentage, that's a bit of a change. They have a pretty highly rated power play, but it was not clicking in that regional. So they need to figure out how to get that going. Penalty kill, I thought was fine. They also didn't really get hurt at all on the penalty kill, did their job there. I wasn't impressed by the power plays they faced either, really. So I don't have much to say. It's a pretty typical power play 1-3-1. They do move the pieces around a little bit and get kind of cycle around and guys move to different positions. But generally the top power play has Benning at the point with Brink and Savoy on the wings, Mazur at net front and Gutman in the bumper slot. And then power play two, they have 2D on it, but Boehm's down on the wing. Rizzo's on the other wing, Wright's in front and Stapley in the bumper. So
But their
plenty
penalty
of talent, but they just were not on in the Loveland Regional.
and their kill is only about 80%, which is not terrible, but it's not great either. And going against a arguably one of the more lethal penalty kill or power plays that they would see. If this is a special teams game, you may also lean a little bit Michigan in this area too.
Yes, I would say Michigan is the better special teams here.
Just looking through their schedule, they did play some interesting teams. They went to Providence and Boston College. Obviously, this Boston College team is not what they normally are, but they probably scheduled them thinking they might be. And they went out there in mid to late October, lost 6-5 at Providence and lost 5-1 at BC, which they then backed up the couple weekends later by going to North Dakota and getting beaten 3-1 and 4-1. So those are some of the circles there that are ended up being what about half of their losses came within about a 2 week stretch, 2 or 3 week stretch. They did beat Western Michigan three times, losing in at Lawson once, 6-4 in a barn burner. They played Duluth four times and went 2-2. St. Cloud, they played, it looks like, twice and beat them twice, including 8-5. So Denver has had their whatever the opposite of six goalies is, six forwards and no goalie type games as well.
Yeah, Denver, I would expect this is going to be a high-scoring game. And if it's not a high-scoring game, it's probably because one goalie played really, really well.
All right. Any last notes that you noticed about either their roster when you watched them or something to keep an eye on in it that we haven't talked about for Thursday?
Not particularly.
All right. Well, we will take a bit of a break here and come back and talk about the other two teams, both of whom Michigan has already seen this year.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Thursday, we will see two teams from the same state that are, I mean, kind of rivals. They were never in the same conference, I don't believe, but, or maybe Mankato might have been in the WCHA a while ago.
No, Mankato moved up from WCHA, I mean, to D1 in 96. Wasn't the CCHA already going in 96, or was Michigan still in the WCHA then?
Correct, but Minnesota was also in the WCHA until the Big Ten. So
yeah, you're right.
I think they did play against each other, but it is Minnesota and Minnesota State. We've talked about Minnesota a ton throughout the year, so we will leave them for last. Michigan did play Minnesota State earlier in the year. The Screaming Eagles, or as you like to call them, Mavericks, have had, I mean, I don't even know how to describe, I mean, this is the year that basically we were, I guess, dreaming or talking about what Michigan could, should, hopefully would have. I mean, they went 37-5, 3-0 in overtime, 23-3 in the CCHA. The last time they lost a game was January 14th. And since Michigan beat them on October 16th, they've lost three times. And that was in like game six of the year. So they're 4-1 going into that game. They lose to Michigan 3-2 in a really, you know, when we look back at where the best games Michigan has played, you know, that Minnesota game is up there. The Notre Dame one previously is also in that conversation, but then it's always, this was the one we'd always throw it back to, is when they beat Minnesota State. But so Michigan beats them, they go to 4-2, and then they lose three times in the next like 6 months.
Well,
I mean, how does that? I mean,
to be fair, they don't play anybody. And that's kind of
They still play hockey games.
It's been the case with Minnesota State for a long time. And to their credit, they did load up the non-conference. They played six tough games to start the season against tournament teams. Yep. Well, five. Providence wasn't, but you had reason to believe they would be.
Well, they're on the verge.
And then after that, they played Duluth twice at the turn of the year. And then, you know, Michigan Tech was buried in their schedule. But that's not a very hard conference. And so that's kind of been the story of Minnesota State for the last number of years, right? They just run through their conference. They've won a conference title in the regular season, I think, in six of the last 7 years. But then it's what can they do when they play real teams? And for many years, it was not very well. And then last 2 years, they've started to win some tournament games. So Mike Hastings really turned the ship around after the first 15 years after they moved up to D1. They did not play very well. Then they started making the tourney consistently, but they went 0-5 in their first five tourney attempts with Mike Hastings, including several notable meltdowns where they blew multi-goal leads in notable situations. So
the year that Michigan went to the Frozen Four in 18 in their first round game, I believe they were the one and Duluth was the four, and that game went to overtime and they scored in overtime, but one of their players was in the net legally because he did not hit the goalie, but got in the net and the puck hit him before it fully crossed.
Minnesota State was a two that year, but yes.
Okay. Well, maybe Duluth was the three, but yeah. I think it was the first round match, but their own forward literally saved the puck from going into the net after it beat the goalie. So, I mean, that should tell you.
Well, here's the story of what I was talking about. They were up 2-0 in that game and lost 3-2. The next year, this was the famous one. They were up 3-0 against Providence and lost 6-3.
They gave up six unanswered?
Yeah. This has been a theme for Minnesota State for a while. Is that they would choke in the tournament and not just choke, but choke with a, you know, lead in tow. However, that narrative has been reversed some in recent years, which is good news. They last year got to play Minnesota in the tournament and they knocked off the Gophers, who were the one seed in that region. And they were the ones, by the way, in the first round matchup, making the comeback instead of being the one to blow the lead. Quinnipiac was up 3-1 with 5 minutes to go in that game. And Minnesota Duluth won 4-3 in overtime. And then Minnesota State. And then Minnesota State shut out Minnesota 4-0 in the regional final, made it to the Frozen Four where they played a shootout game against St. Cloud State. They were up 4-3 in the third period, lost 5-4, where the final goal was scored in the final minute of regulation. And then this year, they get the multi-goal lead on Harvard. They don't choke, but they come close.
They come close,
And hang on against the Crimson, and then they shut out Notre Dame 1-0. So they've kind of reversed some of the old narratives. They're now winning in the tournament. They've made the Frozen Four back-to-back years. They're not blowing leads the same way they used to. And this is kind of like, in a lot like Michigan, this was their year. This was a season where they entered the season returning a lot of talent and sort of saying, we got to do it. This is our season to make it happen. And they've done just about everything you could want to get to this point.
Well, and all of their numbers are really good. Just going across them, they're like second, they're top few in Corsi, I think. I forget where they were two going in the tournament. They might be right. I think there might actually be one now, but their power plays at 27%, their kills at 87%, which is insane. They still have a bunch of guys that score. I mean, they have like seven guys over 0.75 points per game. Their goaltending numbers are good. 1.27, 0.934. I mean, like all of these things are Like, if you put these, if you put goals on the board for all this stuff, you check each one of these boxes as yes, this is what we wanted. I mean, do you like discount that because of competition? Like, we talked a little bit about Quinnipiac last week or 2 weeks ago, I should say, that, oh, well, you know, they have these phenomenal numbers. And then, you know, you look in their goalie gives up four against Michigan and, you know, he gives up what, four against St. Cloud. And you're like, oh, maybe it's just competition stuff. Do you put any of these hilarious numbers sort of out the window because it's a lot of WCHA teams, or I guess
So,
CCHA
you
now.
know, the KRATCH ratings have Minnesota State neck and neck with Michigan, and I think that is a testament to how good Minnesota State is. But the gap between their numbers and Michigan's numbers can be, or at least KRATCH would argue, can be explained by the difference in schedule. Because, yeah, their schedule is not very good. I mean, remember Lake Superior State, who Michigan handled very easily.
Well, they toyed around in the
I
second
mean,
game and
Michigan
then.
didn't play well and yet beat them twice
Yes,
without
that is
a
true.
lot of issue. Lake Superior State is the fourth best team in the CCHA. They had one other team inside the top 20 in KRATCH, and that was Michigan Tech, who did not score a goal against Michigan's roster with multiple
C
limbs
team.
missing. Multiple limbs missing. So, yeah,
Multiple.
look, they don't have a very good schedule, but when they did play tournament teams, they won those games. They swept Michigan Tech on the season. They
They beat UMass twice.
swept UMass. They swept Duluth. They split with St. Cloud. They beat a bubble Providence team, and then they had a one goal loss to Michigan. And you look at their four losses or five losses now on the season and go through them, two goal, one goal, one goal, one goal, two goal in the margins. Those are close games that they tend to lose. And the one to Northern Michigan, which was a stunning upset, had an empty netter, and the one to St. Cloud was a genuine two goal. So they've lost really one authentic two goal game this entire season.
I mean, I know that they are not playing as good a competition, but that still seems insane
It's a
because.
really good team. Here's the thing, when you look at the KRATCH ratings historically, Michigan and Minnesota State are considered two of the best teams of the past decade. The KRATCH ratings, there is normally not a team in the 700s. Normally, the best team is the 400, 500. Those two teams are both over 750. They are two of the best teams of the past decade.
Well. Why are they so good then? I mean, do they you they don't have the draft picks, so but
Because
they
they've
do
got a
have
bunch of like 35-year-olds.
so they're just literally men amongst boys in this
I mean,
situation.
they've perfected the other way to build a team, which
Right.
is to have your top scorers be born in 1997 or 1998. And that is another way to build a team. And it's a successful one. They play defense really well. They have a really good goaltender. And then you kind of look at the rest of their squad. They get contributions from all over. They have, what, seven goal scorers in double figures. They've got good defensemen. Jake Livingstone is a really good player. Akito Hirose, brother of Taro, is very good as well. Those two guys produce a lot for them. So, yeah, I mean, this is a good, deep, balanced team drilled on the fundamentals and is the product of many, many years of Mike Hastings building a really good team. Also, you know what? If you want to know the answer as to why they're a really good team, it's because they got Minnesota Duluth is a coach's son to play for them. If you take the son of the coach who wins all the national titles and you convince him to play for your team and not his, like, that is the big baller move. Like,
I mean,
you're
is he a
guaranteed to
player?
be, you're guaranteed. Yeah, he's one of their better forwards.
No, but I mean, like,
He's their fifth highest scorer. He's
okay,
their leading
yes.
goal scorer, 21 goals.
Okay, but he's also not drafted, right?
No, but he's a good
Okay.
player. Like, I mean,
Yeah. Oh, I'm not saying they don't have good players, but it's not like they talked some second round pick into, hey, why don't you leave home and come here? I mean,
there's no way he was not going to be offered by his dad.
that's probably true.
I mean, Coach K's grandson and Steven Izzo get to, you know, pretend to be on the team. Like, this guy is a lot better than that. There would have been
Okay.
room for him on the team.
Okay, that's fair. Do you want to give us a breakdown of the most important player on this team, the guy that everyone wants to know about in Josh Grohl?
Yeah, Josh Grohl, he's gotten to play. He hasn't done a ton. 4 goals in 38 games, but he almost
scored the most phantom goal.
Yeah. Against Michigan on Portillo's one signature.
I forgot about that.
So
you're right. I was thinking of the Bemidji State goal that was called back.
Oh yeah, no, Grohl had the one against Michigan where Portillo like dove.
Right.
To get back in the crease,
cameras didn't move.
Yeah,
and so you're like couldn't really see what's going on, and the puck comes into the screen, and Portillo comes into the screen like dueling Superman, and one of them hits the other. Yeah.
So this is a really good team. There's no question about that. They have cruised through their schedule. They've done everything they need to position themselves to have a chance to win a national title.
Well, is there another team that they should be facing than Big Brother themselves in Minnesota?
Nope. I mean, this is...
I mean, they beat them last year, I guess, right?
They did beat them last year. You know, what I'll say about this is it's going to be really fun. And it's a big bummer that this is not taking place within a reasonable distance of the state of Minnesota. Like, if this Frozen Four was taking place in St. Paul, it'd be crazy. And that would be great. But unfortunately, it's
for that game. I'm done. Personally, I'm done with Michigan going to St. Paul, but that's just my personal experience. But this game, yes, this game should be
held in Green Bay. It would be great. But unfortunately, it's not. It's being played in Boston. So hopefully the fans in Minnesota have access to plane tickets, but maybe they don't. We don't know.
Maybe they could take the sleds there.
But there are a lot of emotion on the line in this matchup. And Minnesota, look, they boast the talent that Minnesota State doesn't have, younger guys, but bigger guys. Minnesota is one of the heftiest teams in college hockey, which Minnesota State is surprisingly light. Both teams have height, though, and I would expect this to be games where you bang around. I would expect these games to be low scoring, quite frankly, with the way Minnesota State can put the clamps on you and the way Minnesota can and the way they did against Western Michigan in the regional final. And last year, obviously, one team pitched a shutout. So I would expect this to be a tighter checking, much more sort of disciplined defense type of game than the one we probably will have just witnessed between Michigan and Denver. So it'll be a heel turn. But, you know, these matchups are always interesting because you've got so much on the line in terms of players who know that this is it for them. Where Minnesota State, especially with McKay in net, this is their team, and this is the team they wanted to win. They have plenty of juniors, too, who will probably be back, but this is their moment. And obviously, Michigan has a bunch of guys who will be out the door the moment the season ends, and Denver, I would imagine, Brink and some of those seniors, same thing. And Minnesota, I mean, Ben Myers, the moment he steps off the ice for the final time in college, there's going to be a contract waiting for him to sign from about 15 different teams, depending on which one he chooses. And it's, you know, now at this point, widely known that Matthew Nyes will be signing a deal with the Maple Leafs when the season ends. So those are their two stars. I would imagine Brock Faber is probably gone. I imagine Ryan Johnson's probably gone. Those guys will all be ready for the NHL. Like, this is the end. And that's what makes the Frozen Four so fun, is you know it might be the last time putting on the sweater, and it's an extra incentive to raise your game to a higher level.
Do you think Lucius not being there really hurts them?
No, he's been not very good this year, so,
He'll be a great player,
I think, next year. I would look for him to be a breakout player, but between the injuries and the inconsistency, it just didn't pan out for him this season. I mean, he's got a lot of talent, but you know, look at the stats for him this season. He hasn't played that many games and, you know, only 24 games, 9 goals, you know, fine player in that span, but they've been playing without him for a lot of this year, and that hasn't stopped them from winning a lot of games. So I don't think it changes the bottom line to me.
The thing about this Minnesota team is, like, how many times have we counted them out just in the last
Lucius hasn't played since
months.
February 12th. So I
okay, so they've missed him for a lot of this run anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, we counted them out a little bit towards the end of January when Jack Fontaine left, and then when it looked like they were going to send multiple guys to the Olympics, and they did, and then when, you know, Justin Close had a couple shaky games against Alaska and then Michigan, And the only thing that they did was respond and not die. And then they just went on a terror rampage through and beat everybody. And then they get their guys back and they go blowing through Penn State after being down, what, 3-0, I think, early on. And they don't give up a goal against Wisconsin in the final regular season weekend. They win the Big Ten regular season, something that a month previous we were saying, might they finish fourth?
Well, and they kept fighting till the end against Michigan in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah.
And they were kind of on the ropes against UMass and clawed back from 3-1 down to win that game in overtime.
I mean, they were a little on the ropes against Penn State in the Big Ten semifinal.
Yeah, they were definitely teetering there. But this is a team with a lot of heart, and it's a lot of experience, too. And you look at their top scorers, junior, senior, freshman, junior, senior, junior. That's a lot of experience up front. And a number of those guys, you know, Nyes is really the exception. Everybody else was here last year. They remember being denied the Frozen Four. Now they got there first time Minnesota's been there in a while. So that's a notable watermark moment for the program. And they've been through this before. They are ready to go. They've played games in March. They're ready for these kinds of moments. And it's going to be a really fun battle. I would guess this game will finish 2-1.
And let's be clear, Justin Close has been very good.
Except against Michigan.
But well, hey, I'll take that any day. But, I mean, his numbers, 1.83 on the year and 9.29 save percentage, both are very, very good. He has 3 shutouts and only, I think, 18 decisions, 20 games played. I mean, no one saw this coming, right? I mean,
it came out of nowhere. Here's what I'll say about the Michigan thing, though. There's been several guys this year who were like, well, they're really good goalies, but they give up a lot against Michigan.
I wonder what the common denominator there is.
The common denominator is I would say Michigan has probably several of the top shooters in college hockey.
Yeah.
And a level of finisher you do not see for any other team, really. So that's just one thing here. You don't see that level of finisher against Minnesota State. So I would expect to see Close play a good game, but that may not be enough, right? This is how this goes, right? Ryan Fanti was great against Denver, wasn't enough. That's how it works sometimes.
Well, that
the puck bounces off the boards, it goes off you, and it goes.
Yeah.
Who knows, right?
It's
how these games work.
That was a game that, I mean, you could argue Denver should have won based on the way that they played. But
well, they did win it, and they deserve to win it.
Right, and I think that's more.
But
I think
there's a chance Minnesota State could throttle Minnesota. Who knows? I mean,
yeah.
K-Ratch says they're a lot better.
That is true. That will be.
K-Ratch says Michigan and Minnesota State are very similar teams. Michigan has gone 3-1-1 against the Gophers this year. So
I mean, we haven't really talked about this at all, but like this, I mean, we've talked about it to an extent, but in like previous comparisons, this Frozen Four is absolutely loaded.
Or really good teams.
And like you also have, I mean, what, 2 of the best goalies in college hockey and another one who's just played insanely well down the stretch.
Yep.
And then one who you're not really sure about in Denver. But like, I don't know. You just eat all these matchups. Like you look at that Michigan against Denver matchup and that's just like a neutral's dream, right? You're just like it should be fireworks. And then you look at this game and yeah, you said that, you know, Minnesota State could come out and throttle Minnesota. It's hard for me to see that happening. I suppose it's possible, but you could, I mean, that one, like you said also earlier that it feels almost like a, you know, a backyard fight, right? Like it's going to be close. It's going to be hitting. It's going to be probably solid goalie play. And then it's who can pick their corner or who can convert on their power play. And I mean, it's hard. I don't know. I've just seen Minnesota too much this year. It's hard to go against them. I think Minnesota State, like you said, is maybe the better team and maybe in a series wins. But in one game, I don't know if there is a such thing as intangibles in situations like this, it's just hard to go against Minnesota for me personally.
Yeah, I just like Minnesota State's team. I think they've played really well this season, and I don't know why they can't go 1 or 2 rounds further. So, but the truth is that picking these single games is kind of a useless exercise. So, what I'll say
that's why we get the big bucks, though.
What I'll say is we could see some madness. We have seen madness in the Frozen Four before, and the last time it was in Boston, it was really wild. Boston with all of the hype. Jack Eichel, as the Hobie winner, was on their team. They were one of the top seeds in the country. They were playing a four seed in Providence, who had been on a Cinderella run. Boston U held
played at home their first two games.
Boston U was up 4-3 with the home crowd in the third period, and Providence flipped a puck from center ice down ice. The goaltender for Boston U caught it out of the air, put it down on the ice, and it rolled between his legs and in the net. And that tied it. About 2 minutes later, Providence won a draw and ripped it by him to go up 5-4, and they won.
Well, that's that's a way to end a hockey game. I mean, Michigan also has good history there, too. They won a national title the third last time it was there in 1998.
So did Denver in 2004.
And Denver won in 2004. So
beating
there are teams.
Jimmy Howard, of all
people.
Yep, who was a really good goalie for Maine.
Maine. Man, you forget that Maine was at once a really good program.
Maine was really good decently good a few years ago. They were a bubble team, you may recall that.
Yeah.
Do you remember who their goalie was?
A few years ago, not offhand.
Jeremy Swayman, now of the Boston Bruins. Oh. They were a carcass dragged to bubble status by Jeremy Swayman. So,
sort of like Northeastern and Levi.
Whenever Maine is good, they're good because of a goalie who's just like unbeatable.
Well, didn't they win like national titles? Like, well, they beat Michigan in 97.
Yeah, that was a million years ago.
A million years ago.
Let me look Maine hockey up.
A million years before you were born. About the time you were born.
They won titles in 93 and 99. They have not made the Frozen Four since 07. They have not made the tournament since 2012.
Who would have thought we'd be talking about Maine on this hockey cast? You never know what's going to happen. I guess, like, in summation, then.
Oh, who else played at Maine?
Paul Kariya.
Paul Kariya, yeah. One of their Hobie winners, yeah.
Yeah.
And Gustav Nyquist.
Just won't die. Just like the Gophers. I guess in summation, like this was what the college hockey tournament needed, is you have a couple of all-time teams and you want them playing deep in the tournament, and they both are, and they're both facing probably the desired team that they could face out of their opposing bracket, where you have Michigan gets its mirror team from Denver, and Minnesota State gets Minnesota of all teams, who can play both ways, right? They can play a rock 'em sock 'em slow it down game, and they can also skate by you and play in a score fest. And that's something that Minnesota State has shown that they can do too. I mean, not many teams that they've played will be able have skated with them and have outperformed them, but they can skate fast enough and play well enough to play at up tempo and score goals. And I think that this is, if, you know, it's hard to take like the Michigan enjoyment and what happens with this team out of it. But from a college hockey standpoint, of all the BS that we've heard over the last 15 or 20 years about growing the game and, you know, expanding to different regions and all that hoo-ha, then this is what will do it. This putting four teams on national television like this
at is 5 in the afternoon on a weekday.
I mean, so that was the other thing I was thinking of. It's when was the last time Michigan was in the Frozen Four and drew the early game? Like, I've been to the last three that they were at. So it would have to, the last time that it possibly could have been was 2002. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we could look these things up, but in the 20 years or whatever that I've been a Michigan fan, every time they've made the Frozen Four, they have been the late game, and they're the early game against Denver. I don't understand that either, but
who knows?
Maybe the people in Minnesota will still be working and they want to give them like an extra hour to come home.
Yeah. Well,
from the lakes of Mankato.
Too bad for the people of Denver.
Also fair. Hey, if you're in Denver, you should be there. I mean, all these fans should go to this. This has a chance to be an all-timer. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. And obviously anything can happen in this crazy bouncy sport. But in with these particular teams, it's just going to be a treat to watch what these two matchups should be, as we've talked about.
The final thing I want to bring up is that for those who are going to watch on Thursday, in case you're listening to this hour-long podcast but not planning to watch,
I wonder what that Venn diagram looks like.
Denver's coach is one of the most ginger people of all time. Just stunningly ginger. So be ready for that.
I mean, do you expect a lot of like panning to the
He was
Denver
on screen
bench?
plenty in the games I watched. It's David Carl is his name, brother of Matt Carl, who played
I
a
was
long
gonna say,
time
didn't they have a Carl
in
with an E?
Yes. He's been there a few years now. He's a young coach. He is 32 years old.
32? That's like your age.
Well, it's about the same age as Minnesota State's players.
That's a good one.
Also from Anchorage, Alaska. Same place, same state as Jeremy Swayman, who we discussed a few minutes ago. I learned that the other day because he's got an Alaska map on his Bruins goalie helmet. So it's kind of neat.
That's interesting. I just saw a helmet that had a Wisconsin W on it. I was watching a game the last couple nights, and I was surprised by it. I can't remember who that was.
So it should be a fun weekend, or it won't be.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, that's what I said. Is
It'll be
like,
a fun weekend of hockey for the neutral observer.
yeah, but hopefully next week we will be toasting champagne.
For listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.23 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week for the Boston Tourism episode.